So my name is Kyle Sapp. I have been at my church, Cordova Church of Christ, since the fall of 2015 as their preacher. Before that, I was a youth minister in Antioch, California for 9 years. And all of that tells you that I am woefully underqualified for talking about what we're going to talk about today. I was talking to somebody about this class, and they said, "Oh, do you have an MFT?" "No." "Oh, do you have a degree in counseling?" "Nope." "I have a Bible degree and a youth ministry degree." So, yay. The journey for how we kind of got here is a fun little conglomeration of things. When I was at Eastside, one of my friends, who was very dear and near to my heart, went through a time of depression, very serious, very scary, and I had no idea what to do, how to help, how to support. He got 5150 at one point, and I was like, "Oh, okay, do you need casseroles?" Because I'm from Alabama, and that's what we do. We need to help people. You make a casserole, because that's all problems, guys. Chicken, sour cream, cracker topping, boom. It sounds disgusting, but it's actually really good. So he had his moment, and as a youth minister, I dealt with kids who, some of them were suicidal, some of them had their own little addictions to whatever. Some of them said that they were depressed, some of them actually did have clinical depression, and so we just kind of walked through all of those fun little journeys together, and we did our best. And then I moved to Cordova, where our youth minister's wife started doing a master's thesis on social work, and her thesis was on mental health in the church, and she said, "Can I interview you for my thesis?" And I was like, "Absolutely. Let's do this thing." So her first question was, "What is mental illness?" And my mind had no answer. You ever had one of those moments, and this is rare for people who know me, that my mind had nothing to say? Like, that is a great question. Insightfully asked. You know, it's like depression or anxiety. She's like, "Right, but how do you define it?" I don't have a definition for you. And then I realized that we had 45 more minutes of this, and I felt super embarrassed and very ashamed by all of this. So good news, I'm going to give you a clinical definition of mental illness in this class so that you don't have to look like a fool when you're interviewed next. Again, you're welcome. So aside that, we're going to look at three struggles that come into this conversation as how we deal with this in the church, and then we'll look at three ways we can support people who have mental illness, either as individuals or as a community. But first we begin with two stories with Jesus, because, you know, Christian, it's what I do. The first one comes from Matthew chapter 8, verses 1 through 3. When Jesus came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." And Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said, "be clean." Immediately, he was cleansed of his leprosy. I remember a few years back, Jeff Walling acted this out at a Zoe conference. And he played Jesus. I'm pretty sure he did. And that one dude from Zoe played the leper. And what I thought interesting about Jeff's interpretation was that he didn't just, like, tap your heel. He gave him an embrace, like a full-bodied hug. And I thought that was a really interesting way of thinking about how Jesus might have touched this leper. This leper who had been untouched for who knows how long, but for a good portion of his life. This leper who had gone his whole day having to say, "I am unclean, walk away from me." Jesus touches him. Jesus embraces him. And one of the grounding things about Christianity and the ministries that we do is that Jesus touches the untouchable. He embraces those who are unembraced. And what you'll find today when you think about mental illness is that there is a lot of unembraceable people who the church is ignoring for various reasons. Our next story comes here, Mark chapter 5. This is the guy who has legion, and I want to be very clear here. I'm not associating mental illness with demon possession. That happens in conversations. I'm not making that statement. I think scripturally speaking, you're just as likely to say somebody has a demon who is blind or has some kind of paralysis and has a mental illness. So let's just not go there at all. If you want to talk about that later, you can find someone else to talk to about that. But anyway, so the scriptures say, "This man lived in the tombs and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained to hand and foot, but tore the chains apart and he broke the irons of his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him, and so night and day among the tombs and in the hills he would cry out and cut himself with stones. And what I want to point out to you is that when we meet difficult people, we more often than not try to subdue them, try to chain them, try to avoid them, but Jesus breaks chains. That Jesus goes to these kinds of people. What's so beautifully complex about our Savior is that while we are drawn to the clean people, those who look like me, Jesus is drawn to those who look different. And it's almost an obsession with him. But he goes out of his way. And I am not here to say that I've mastered any of these conversations or that I'm even really good at them. More often than not, I feel woefully under-equipped for the things that God sends me to do. And then hopefully no one dies. That's really the goal of my life, is just to not kill anyone in the name of Jesus. But if you think about that, you think about why they chained him up, is that he's in the cemetery. So when you go to the cemetery to mourn your family, then you've got this crazy guy. So let's be very clear here. I often read stories like this, and it's easy for me to think, I would never do that. I would be one of those people that's like, hey, let's stop yelling at that funeral procession. Let's go over here. But the reality is that more often than not, we're the crowd that chains. We're the crowd that binds. And that's not to guilt us. It's just to make us aware of our unintentional hurts and habits that we cause on people. And a lot of this, I think, a lot of these conversations are hard to have because no one is actively out to fight mental illness and be opposed to those people. No one is actively saying from the pulpit, Lord willing, if you have depression, you're going to hell. Get thee away from me. No one is saying that. We're talking about the unspoken comments, the unspoken actions, the unintentional pains. Recently, Netflix released 13 Reasons Why. And the thing that really annoyed me about the show, it's actually really well done. Don't watch it unless you're in a mentally healthy place. It gets really dark at the end. But the thing that annoyed me a little bit was that it made the main character, that kid who's a shy introvert who was just awkward, it made him seem like a bad guy for being an awkward introvert. And it's like, well, he's a 16-year-old kid. Like, let's give ourselves a break. Let's take a breath. And so I'm not asking that we be perfect. I'm asking that we simply open our eyes and do better to listen. And nobody is a villain. We're just all trying to survive. So, let's talk about mental illness. Mental illness. Let's go to the next slide. Mental illness is this. A mental illness is a disorder of the brain resulting in the disruption of a person's thoughts, feelings, moods, and ability to relate to others that is severe enough to require psychological and psychiatric intervention. This becomes our first struggle, is that we don't have clarity on what we're actually talking about. What makes a mental illness a mental illness? See, the truth of the matter is, everybody's going to go through periods of life where they have change in moods, change in thoughts, change in attitudes and behaviors. That's actually very normal. A mental illness is a disorder of the brain that causes that very normal experience to go to 1,000, to turn it up to 11 for those of you who like Spinal Tap. But a problem comes into this conversation when we go through a normal experience, like sadness, but we use clinical terms to define that experience. How are you doing today? Well, I'm depressed. Whoa, why are you depressed? Well, Auburn lost at the football game. I'm from Alabama, so that should never make anyone sad. But like your team lost? Like, I was in the Bay Area, and we had Oakland Raiders fans. Like, they knew, what they were probably pretty close to being depressed when it came to football because their team was just very bad. But still, that's not depression. That's just sorrow at best. And so we have to avoid these over-exaggerated uses of our feelings. When I preached this at Cordova, after the first sermon, I said, okay, guys, for the rest of the week and the rest of the series, we're all going to agree, we are not going to exaggerate how we feel. We will just speak accurately of our feelings. So you're not depressed. You're sad. You're not dying in anxiety. You got a little bit of stress. These things are normal, but a mental illness is a brain disorder. It's a problem within whatever is going on in this crazy organ up here that is so marvelously complex and hard to understand. We know nothing about the brain in comparison to what we know about, say, the liver or the lower intestine. Because, you know, people love studying the lower intestine. All right, next slide. Here's some statistics for you. 1 in 5 adults in the U.S., that's 43.8 million, or 18.5%, for those of you who like percentages, experiences mental illness in a given year. Keep going. 1 in 25 adults, 10 million, 4.2, experiences a serious mental illness. And so there are varying degrees, which also makes this a fun little conversation. 1.1% of adults have schizophrenia. 2.6% of adults live with bipolar disorder. 6.9% of adults, 16 million, have at least one major depressive episode in the past year. Okay, I want to be very clear. Bipolar disorder, just so we're all on the same page when we say that, that's swings between extremes, just so everyone gets that. It goes from manic, hyper, happy, woo, to everyone hates me, life is miserable, I just want to sit in my house and die. And what's very frustrating is one of my friends at church has bipolar disorder, and she can be this bubbly, crazy, she's just a delight to be around. And then 5 minutes later, boom. And it hurts. And she's in my small group. And there's this period where she and her husband stopped coming to the small group. And I was like, hey, you know, we really miss you guys. Like, we see you in the morning, what's going on? And that's when she said, I have bipolar disorder, and I can be great in the morning, and then everything falls out that afternoon, and I just can't get out of bed. And I hurt for her so much. Like, oh, I wish I could fix you. I wish I could just make your brain better. And this is a subtle point, but we're not here talking about fixing people. You don't fix mental illness. You support people to health. And we'll get into that a little bit more. Maybe. If not, you can ask me better. 18.1% experience some kind of anxiety disorder. That's where you have an irrational fear, even though you intellectually know you shouldn't, but you do. And then among 20.2 million adults in the U.S. who experience a substance abuse disorder, like an addiction, 50% of them had a co-occurring mental illness. So what I think that's about is that they actually had an underlying mental illness like depression or anxiety, and then they were trying to self-medicate. And that created a whole other slew of problems. Okay, let's go to the next one. Okay, so this is important too. Our second struggle is because there's a lack of clarity. One of the reasons there's a lack of clarity is because there's just a difference in all of the stories of mental illness, that no one person has the same story. No one mental illness is the same type. You can't help somebody with anxiety the way you help somebody with depression. But even beyond that, a lot of people who even have depression, the way you support them is different among each other. Like, there are differences in those experiences, and we have to be very careful not to broad brush anyone. Part of this is the simple truth that there are numerous ways that mental illness develops in people's lives. It can be either as a response to a trauma, such as domestic abuse or sexual abuse. It can be response to a tragic event like a war, that's PTSD. It can be an imbalance in the brain of chemicals, either an overproduction of something or an underproduction of something. You can't know how everything happens. There could be genetic disposition towards this. It's just all different. And even within those people who have those different kinds, there are different triggers. There are different ways that they respond to certain stimuli. And this brings me to one major point that for way too long I ignored. Nobody chooses to have a mental illness. Nobody wakes up one morning and says, I'd really like to have depression today. Yep, emptiness. That's where I want to go. Nobody pours a bowl of cereal and then says, you know, after breakfast, I'm going to go see what it can do to become a schizophrenic. Let's do this thing. It's not how people work. And here's the thing. That's true for a lot of illnesses. Nobody wakes up and says, I want to have pancreatic cancer. Nobody wakes up and says, you know, I want to break my arm, unless they're like a 13-year-old junior high kid who's doing something stupid on a skateboard. Like, that's not how people work. And so, and here's, this is the thing that just breaks my heart, is that when somebody has a physical illness, they have cancer, if they have MS, We will go on fun runs. We will walk for miles. I am doing a 5K for MS on this coming Sunday for a church member. I hate walking, but I love them, so let's do this thing. We'll do those things. But there aren't a lot of fun walks for mental illness. There aren't a lot of golf tournaments to raise awareness for depression or anxiety disorder. Fun fact, May is Mental Health Month. I probably should have done the sermon series in May, but I did it in February. I did it in February because that's a lull time for a lot of people. It's dark, it's sad, it's winter, people are grumpy or they're just depressed. I also think there's some seasonal effects. My wife has seasonal depression. I didn't ask her if I could share that publicly. You're fine. And when we were first married, I did not know that, or at least I did not appreciate that as much, and it made a lot of tension because I was an idiot. And I remember one night we had this like Christmas elder minister dinner, and she couldn't get out of bed, and I was so mad at her. I was like, "You're always sad around this time of the year." It's like, "I can't help how I feel." "You totally can help how you feel." It's like, "Oh, Pastor Kyle, you idiot." She didn't divorce me, so we're still good. I'd like to imagine I'm a better husband also. I want to tell you a story about a friend of mine who was working at a church. This happened about a year ago, maybe 2 years. And I tell you the story not to judge this church. But this was my friend's experience, and I think it's important, and it validates this point. He was let go from his job. And in the meeting that they had where he was being informed that he was let go of his job, one of the elders said, "You're always gone to take care of your wife." His wife has a bipolar disorder. And his wife was in the room, so gutsy move on the elder's part. And she said, "Would you say that if I had cancer?" And he didn't answer. Because he knew that if she had cancer, he would have been praying. The church would have surrounded her. We don't surround the mentally ill like we should. And part of that is that there's such a small number. But that's the point. Like, we look at statistics to bolster our issues. Like, man, 80% of people are dealing with this, so we got to deal with that. But when it comes to mental illness, it's a very small percentage of people in our congregations. But that's the point. They're the lepers. They're the outcasts. As a nation, we suck at addressing mental illness issues. You know why? Because every time we have a chance to talk about it, you know what we talk about instead? Gun control. Every time an issue of some kind of psychosis, some kind of psychotic breakdown happens, it's usually followed up by some school shooting, and then instead of talking about mental health, we talk about gun control and whether we should or shouldn't have it in schools. And I'm not here to say one thing or another about gun control. I don't care about your thoughts on that. But the point is, this is not a sexy topic. And so we don't give it the space it deserves. So going on with that, we create stigmas. Because we don't understand, because we lack clarity, we tend to just kind of presume we know what we're talking about. This is a cartoon, these following. I love these because they help us understand what it's like to be someone with a mental illness. This is, if you treated physical illnesses like mental ones, I get that you have food poisoning and all, but you have to at least make an effort. You just need to change your frame of mind, then you'll feel better about having your hand cut off. Next one. Have you tried, not having the flu? I don't think it's healthy that you have to take medication every day just to feel normal. Don't you worry, it's changing you from who you really are. He's taking insulin. It's like you're not even trying. He's stabbed in the gut. Person's in a coma. Well, lying in bed obviously isn't helping you. You need to try something else. We are dismissive. Nope, go back.
Yeah.
We are dismissive of people's pain. Part of that reason is we think that we know what we're talking about. Because I've been sad before, so I know that when I'm sad, I just do something to be unsad. I know what it's like to be stressed. When I get stressed, I go for a walk. I get in nature. It's wonderful. And then I feel better. Have you tried those things? person with mental illness is, wants to just bite our heads off. It's like, yes, I've tried those things. You think you're the first person to tell me to just change my state of mind to just be happy? That's not how life works. That's not how we work. When I was doing the sermon, we were talking about Addiction Week, which is, again, super fun sermon series. And in my original draft, I sent it to a couple of people to get their feedback. And I said, we actually can relate to addicts because we know what it's like to be tempted. And the feedback I got back said, no, yeah, don't say that. You're totally wrong. You have no idea what it's like to be an addict. So I used, they helped me use this illustration. Imagine, if you will, if everyone could hold up their right hand. If you don't know which one it is, it makes the reverse L. I tell my son all the time, and that just weirds him out. He's four, so he didn't get the joke. imagine you have to carry around in this hand a songbook. You know, let's say the 1996 version of Songs of Faith and Praise. The little red one, it's classic. Or you have enough, you're... All right, you get the A for the class.
It's his book. Oh.
She still gets the A, that should get her helping people. If I asked you to go through the day carrying this songbook, you could, right? I mean, you don't have to keep it in this hand. You could, like, put it on your shoulder. But you could go through the day. It'd be annoying, but you'd be able to do it. Now, imagine that songbook is now a 400-pound boulder. That's addiction. It's not just a temptation to do that. You can put your hand on, you're good. It's not just a temptation. It's a hunger. It's a gnawing. It's a compulsion. It's an obsession. It's a dark friend who's always with you no matter where you are. You can be in a room full of people praising God, and you're the one going, I don't know if I believe any of this because all I want to do right now is go get high. There's a great song that I sang for our church to start this off where it talks about, he says, if a man has got to listen to the voices of a mom who are reeling in the throes of all the happiness they've got, and they tell you that their struggles have been nailed up to that cross, well, what about the times when even followers get lost? Because we all get lost sometimes. And I put up these two pictures of a church crowd, obviously not a Church of Christ because they had their hands up and their eyes were closed, feeling emotions. And then I had this other person outside looking up. And you know what hurts is I've seen that at my church. But what I'm actually really proud of is that our church notices that. We see those people. And we don't stare at them like this is a zoo for broken people. We go and we offer a hug and then we walk away. Because we know that sometimes you don't need to notice somebody in that moment. They'd rather you just kind of walk by. Because we know those people. It's not always the case, but we know who these people are. We've talked to them. We don't want to embarrass them, but we also want them to know that we love them. That happens in our churches more often than we want to admit, or maybe we even notice. And we're lucky if someone actually walks out of the room, because more often than not, they just stay in the room and pretend. And what I would love to say, and what I would hope to say, is that through all of this, we strive to make systems and environments where people stop pretending, because you can't find healing unless you acknowledge there's a problem and unless you let other people know there's a problem. So we lack clarity. We try to paint with a broad brush, and we stigma. We create stigmas for people. So let's talk about supports. I originally was going to call these solutions, and then I realized that I was guilty of my own problems. That this isn't about solving. This isn't about fixing people. This is why I'm not a counselor. I want to fix things, and I can't. And you know what? I'm not saying that even Jesus. I'm not saying that Jesus will just take the depression away. I'm not going to make any false promises with that. Because that's not always how Jesus works. Maybe he will. Maybe a miracle will happen. But more often than not, that's not the case. Why? Because miracles are not normal. That's why they're miracles. There's a young lady at our church. She deals with chronic pain. Which, fun fact, there's a class about chronic pain today at 1:30. You should come. It's in this room. And she's on that verge where she's angry at God. She's been praying to God for 3 years. She's 20 years old, and she can't do what 20-year-olds can do. And she's pissed off at the Lord. And she should be. There's nothing wrong with being mad at God. I would be mad at God. Maybe I'm just a bad person. I don't know. And so I asked her, what would God caring look like? She says, God doesn't care about me. I wish I knew that God cared about me. It's like, what would that look like? She says, I don't know. Maybe just someone saying, I'm your friend. Maybe just people walking alongside me and not making me feel bad for needing to go home early. She's 20 years old. She should be out clubbing in a Christian club. The Church of Christ Club, but there's no dancing or clapping. It's junior high prom. It's just awkward swaying to a cappella. Best club ever. No, I want to go back a little bit. No?
Wrong way.
Yeah, wrong way. So the first support is that we talk and we listen. And what I mean by talk about this is if you are a preacher, or you are buddies with a preacher, or you have any kind of sway with a preacher, or if you have a preacher in your church, these should be talked about from the pulpit. This topic should be addressed. It should be addressed from the pulpit because we address things from the pulpit that are important to us. We'll talk about racial division, as we should. We will talk about reading your Bible every day, which is good. We'll talk about prayer. We'll talk about we'll talk about spiritual disciplines. We'll engage in women's roles for those of us who are gutsy enough or stupid enough to do that. We'll talk about instrumental music. We'll talk about all these things. We'll never talk about mental illness, but we should. Because these people deserve to have their voice heard. They deserve to be a part of the group. They deserve to be known and to be loved and to be accepted as they are. And so I announced from the pulpit, and I gave time for this, because I know that this we were going to get into some difficult conversations. No one likes Suicide Sunday. It's hard. And so I gave like a 9-week warning. And I said, hey, in February, this is back in December, we're going to have this conversation. And I'm just preparing you now. I was also extending child care, so I wanted to make sure parents knew that they didn't have to talk to their third grader about what pornography addiction is or any of those things. So I was giving them a heads up. And I had intended, talking to our members who I knew who had mental illness, to hear their stories, to honor their stories, to honor their pain. But what was remarkable and I didn't see coming is that other people who I didn't know had mental illness, they said, can I share my story? And I was like, absolutely. So I would sit, and I would have coffee, or most of the time these were dinners, because you should always eat with people, and just listen. And I said, it's going to be completely anonymous, and a good number of them were like, no, you can use my name. I'm okay with that. Like, no. I'm not even telling my congregation that we're using people from our congregation, because this is our first conversation, and I don't want some immature moron having some kind of mental illness witch hunt. It's not a thing. But they stood up and they said, this is who I am. This is my life. This is my story. And it's beautiful. And you know what? We actually got members to start coming to our church. Visitors came, just happened to come. They had there was a family, they had bipolar disorder. It was the wife. Yeah. And she'd never heard a sermon series on bipolar disorder. She'd never even heard of a church talking about that. And she said, I want to come back to this church. This feels like a place I could be loved. And I'm like, in theory, totally. In practice, hopefully. Because I'll be honest, there is a lady, I know she has bipolar disorder in our church. She stopped coming to our church because people didn't surround her. That she was weird and crazy. Or the words they used, I would never use those words. She felt alone and she left. Like, I even tried, like, when I found out she was feeling this way, like, I would call ladies and be like, hey, have you seen this person? Like, oh, God. Let me tell you about her. No, I don't care. I just want you to call her. Like, you can call her. Like, okay. So we're not perfect in this practice. This is a very beginning journey for us. And I don't say that to, like, shame my congregation or anything like that. I love my congregation. I think the fact that we can have these conversations is such a good step. I'll also say that if you can convince your preacher to have these conversations, you need to let your elders know. I'm a big fan of communication between ministers and elders. It's a thing. Just to give them a heads up, we were talking about some dark stuff, and I wanted them to be ready. So I've got a couple of books for you to read if you are interested in learning more about all of this. Grace for the Afflicted by Matthew Safford. It was written in 2008. He's a clinical psychologist, maybe. I can't remember what he is. Is he? Good. Sweet. Great book. It's about 9 years old at this point, but it's still so good. Darkness is My Only Companion by Catherine Green McCate. This is a hard book to read. She's very open about her bipolar disorder and about her family and her struggles. But she does this very, it feels almost Eastern in the way in which she weaves scriptures into her narratives. It's just this, it's just good. Virginia, you'll love this book. You'll also hate me for saying that, because you'll hate this book, too. Mm-hmm. And then this other book is called In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts by Gabor Mate, M.D. Now, all cards on the table, I haven't finished reading this book. It was recommended to me by my good buddy Coleman. He's read it, and it's tough. It's about addiction. It's about this doctor who runs a facility helping people with addiction. And it's an honest look. And it's an ugly look. And I think more often than not, honest looks are pretty ugly. And that's okay. God works in darkness. It's why we have the cross. Okay, the next thing. Collaboration. This is huge. The church and the psychiatric community and psychology, we have, shall we say, a bumpy past. I wouldn't say that we're like best friends. I would say we're like frenemies, maybe, on a good day. Part of this, I think, is because there's this foolish stigma that people who have a mental illness, like depression or anxiety or an addiction, also have some kind of spiritual deficiency. Like, if you just love Jesus more, you wouldn't have that addiction, or you would just be happy, because that's why we sing and be happy today. And so many of us, not everybody, but we come into this conversation with that assumption, and psychologists are like, well, actually, it's a little bit more complex than that, and some of us like to listen, and some of us don't, and so there's, it's a bumpy road. But I would argue that because most of us in the church are not clinical psychologists or skilled at any of this stuff, like, I'm a preacher with a master in divinity and a BS in youth ministry from Harding, I'm woefully under-equipped for helping people through some of these things. And so I collaborate. I have people that I recommend to, and I recommend quick. There's one study found 59%, this is done by Lifeway, it was done in 2014, 59% of pastors interviewed said that they would counsel someone who inevitably was diagnosed with a mental illness. 38% of them, of those pastors, said that they were not equipped to handle that diagnosis. So good on, hopefully those 38% recognized what they were doing. Preachers are not wired, are not necessarily wired to be counselors. We're of this nature. I can listen, I can talk, I can give you some thoughts, but I am not equipped for going the long journey. I'm thinking about it after all of this. I've always wanted to study neuroscience, so who knows? My wife is just going to laugh when she hears that. But we need to collaborate. We need to make friends across the aisle with people who are trained in this. And also, not all psychologists are bad non-Christian heathens, which is just silly. So I have a couple that I sent to. Cordova also, we have a counselor on retainer. We can afford to do that. It's important that we do that. We're not going to stop anytime soon, I hope. If your church can't afford to do that, which I'm not saying that every church should have a counselor on retainer, but what I would encourage you to do is to have a list of counselors that you trust, that if people are dealing with this stuff, you have some go-tos. And the sooner you can get them, the better it'll be. The sooner you can start the journey towards health, the quicker they'll start moving towards health. Because this is a long process, guys. This is hard for a lot of people. One of our church members was originally diagnosed with depression 6 months ago, and like 3 weeks ago said, okay, apparently I don't have depression, I have anxiety disorder and OCD. Cool, okay, now we're moving on. Well, we're not moving on, we're moving in that direction. Another one of our church members dealt with depression years ago. Solved it, felt like, okay, I'm getting out of this, we're good, booyah. And then just recently, in the last 9 months to a year, it's hit it again. And there are very little explanations to why. And we are able to point them to people and say, okay, go talk with this person. Let's do this. Sometimes, honestly, they need medication. And there's a stigma among people about taking medication for mental illness. We make jokes about it. Oh, she needs some Prozac. It's always women who need Prozac, too. That's sexist. It's a sexist joke. It's a bad joke on many levels. It's not a joke. It's not something to laugh at. This is not a catchphrase for a cartoon or a VBS skit or whatever. These are real problems that need real complex answers, and those are hard to find. And that journey is difficult, and we do not mock pain. No matter how creative we think that joke is. Now, in the art of collaboration, I have no idea what time it is, so check that out. Oh, good. I got it. I can do this. There's an issue that you will have to wrestle with, and that is whether you are going to recommend Christian counselors only, or will you recommend non-Christian counselors? I see both sides of this discussion, honestly. I don't ask my doctor or physician their faith when I go for an appointment with whoever my doctor is, whoever that nice lady is. Like, we didn't have the religious discussion when I was having, I was worried I was dying of a heart attack. It turned out I just had indigestion. It just never came up. But I can recognize why some psychologists are atheists for various reasons, and they may suggest things that may go against what we're comfortable with. I am not telling you one way or the other. I think there are pros and cons to both Christian counselors and non-Christian counselors. I know there's one church in our area who did this 8-week Christian counselor certificate, and they had church members coming, and then all of these people became certified Christian counselors, and all my thinking was, oh, no. You read a book once, now you think you know what you're talking about. Yay. And maybe that's judgmental on my part, but I feel like that's how we go. We get a little bit of information, and suddenly we're masters. Now, I've been working on this for like 7 months. Like, I have no idea why I'm up here teaching it, but I'm passionate about this issue. Like, so you're just going to run with me, and hopefully I'm not saying anything too ignorant. But we need to be careful with that. We need to make that decision. It's okay. I only recommend Christian counselors, mostly because I only know Christian counselors. I also say this. Self-evaluation is such a bad thing. We know this because we've used WebMD before, right? And you've all discovered that we have the black plague. It turns out I just have allergies. Thanks, WebMD. So having a counselor that you can go to is going to be so tremendous in helping someone who feels like they're going off kilter to find, kilter. Is that the thing? Okay, that makes sense. I'm just learning new phrases every day. All right, so the final thing is family support. And there are a lot of other ways that we can support. This is a much longer conversation to be had. There's also another class on this later today, so you can go to that one as well. It's not in this room. But oftentimes, if we give attention to people with mental illnesses, we can forget about their family members. But mental illness doesn't happen in a void, and it doesn't just affect that person. Depression affects husbands and wives. It affects children. It affects moms and dads. And they need support, and they need love. And they need a place to go to talk. There's in Darkness is My Only Companion, I almost used this in the sermon, but decided it got too dark, but it's totally cool for Pepperdine. She was talking about her brother, who was, I believe he had bipolar disorder. And there were multiple suicide attempts in his life. And in the book, she said, at one point I got so mad at him, I said, I wish he would just kill himself so that we could start moving on. And then she said, and then I felt like a horrible person. I didn't want my brother to die, but I was tired of living in this world. And that's how a lot of the family members feel. They feel alone. They feel helpless. They want to help, but they don't know how. And they honestly can't. And so they need people to come alongside them as well and say, I love you. I'm here for you. I will walk with you as long as you'll let me. We don't force ourselves on anybody, but we open ourselves up. ultimately, I think that was the last slide. Yeah. Ultimately, I think the gospel is for people with mental illnesses. I think that Jesus is about saving the whole of a person, not just the soul of a person, as N.T. Wright says. I think that the gospel is for that wife who's married to a husband who came back from war and has PTSD. For the last decade, she's been fighting and self-sacrificing to keep that marriage alive. I think the gospel is for that bipolar dad who just wants to play with his son, and on good days he can, but on the bad days he doesn't want to get out of the bed. It's for the schizophrenic mom who everyone says is crazy. It's for the parents of a child who's struggling with suicide, and when he leaves and walks out of the house, they're not sure if that's the last time they're going to watch him walk out of the house. It's for that kid who wants to commit suicide because he just wants the pain to stop. The gospel is for him. The gospel is for the addict who is shamed by holding that needle every day, hating that needle, and yet still finding that needle. The gospel is for all of those people. And our gospel hasn't been big enough in this area, and we need to grow it because Jesus is so big. And grace is so powerful. So there we go. Okay, question.
Thank you. Actually, I have a resource to share, and that is an organization called the National Association of
Mental Illness.
National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Yes.
So NAMI, N-A-M-I, NAMI.org, and there's something called NAMI FaithNet, which is NAMI's outreach to churches.
Yeah.
And just kind of to let you all know that part of severe mental illness is often something called anosognosia, which means a lack of awareness that that a person has that disease. So it's not like denial of having an addiction, which may be more emotionally based. It's actually a more biological, physiological inability to recognize that one has the mental illness.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And my church has been very supportive. I've taught 3/4 of NAMI's family-to-family class in our church. They gave me a 12-foot-long bulletin board to put all the NAMI information on and everything. It's been really wonderful.
So you should really be teaching this class. I'm glad I found that out after the fact. Any other thoughts, questions, comments, President? Okay, let's go blue. That you're not wearing blue. Sorry, your name tag is blue. And then the lady beside you after that.
Isn't everyone's name tag blue?
You're right. You who talks, you I'm pointing at. And then your lady friend beside you.
I'm a physician. So just from the medical perspective of it, I had a couple of comments. One, when you were mentioning family, I think it's important to recognize that a lot of these people have totally, their families have just stepped out. They just can't handle it anymore. And so that puts a heavier burden on us as a church family, but recognizing that they're a big part of their illness is that they're lonely and they feel unsupported. So not saying that that's going to be easy, you know. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention is with severe mental illness, when people are on medication, first of all, with anxiety, it's really hard to get someone to take medication for longer than 2 days because they believe they have every side effect and then some. So that's when I really call in the support of family and friends and even people in their social network to really encourage them to stay on the medication, just to make a promise to stay on it for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Just to see if it's going to make a difference. And the other thing is, especially with bipolar, when you're on medication and you feel good, then you think you can stop.
Right.
And so just really encouraging if you have a chance to be alongside someone who's doing well on their medication, to encourage them to keep taking it. Because it just adds to the roller coaster of mental illness when people are on and off.
Yeah. And speaking of medication, another thing that happened at our church this past year is one lady who was taking medication for depression, the medicine stopped working, and she didn't know. And nobody knew for 6 months. And so now she's having to find new medication. And the journey to finding medication is such a painful process. I mean, because you're dealing with brain chemistry, and that takes time to transition, and it takes time to find side effects. So, yeah, thank you for that. Okay, the lady beside you had a hand, and then I saw you, and then I saw you. So... you first.
Rick Warren did a very wonderful series. It was 4 years ago in August, and you can archive it on saddleback.com. And it was, it started at the end of August. It was something like, you'll get through this.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, with him losing his son to mental illness, and then them getting through. And it is a really, really wonderful series. And you can tell that he's gone. I mean, during the 6 months or so that he took on for healing, that reached out to lots of really good resources to pull together to come up with this series. Is I would highly recommend it for the family and for anybody that's going through things, because it is just beautiful. Brings in all kinds of scriptures that are really pertinent for moving on.
Yeah. And I believe Saddleback also, at least they did this past year, they offered a conference on mental illness.
Yeah, there's one coming up.
Yeah. I wasn't able to go last year, but I hear they live stream it. Okay, you had
it. Also, there are natural things that can be extremely helpful as well. But so if you're not, somebody's not comfortable with going with the medication route, then find a doctor that treats things naturally.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah.
I would just like to encourage every church to embrace those members who are suffering from mental illness and addiction. We have a gentleman who just passed away, unfortunately, a few weeks ago. He was 55, but the impact that he made on us in our church, and we loved him, and we gave him, and we embraced him, and we all treated it as if it was our mission to make sure that we were there for him. He didn't have any family, very ostracized from everything. And he was tough. It was really tough. But I will tell you that the day of his funeral, I stopped looking at him as a broken man and realized he was Jesus on the street, eyes and ears, because 30 of his friends felt safe enough to come into our church building and to feel welcomed and to feel safe and to embrace us and to come in conversation with us. And that was amazing.
Absolutely. Thank you. Praise God for that. Sir in the blue shirt.
Thank you so much. And I'll be real brief, but with a physician colleague here, I thought I'd ask her a question as well. And you may know the answer to this, but certainly in the allopathic world, we use objective data to make diagnoses. And the psychiatric, psychological realm of diagnoses are so much more ambiguous and difficult to manage. Mm-hmm. And yet, sometimes I think we, and again, being in a very non-ambiguous field of medicine, that is cardiac anesthesia, you know, that's not ambiguous. So
thank God that's not ambiguous. I feel real good about that one.
But that being said, you know, if there's something that we see, we know what the problem is, we can make a diagnosis, and in the psychiatric realm, and frankly, with a family member, I've experienced and dealt with frustrations of these issues for years and years, and so I sometimes wonder, as physicians, if we're doing somewhat of a disservice when it comes to approaching these psychiatric diagnoses in the same way that we do other diagnoses. You threw some slides up there with regards to the flu, with regards to psychiatric problems, but we have objective data for the flu, mm-hmm. We don't for psychiatric issues. So it sounds like this lady is much more informed than myself, and I just wondered what your thoughts were on that. Are we sort of putting our culture in a different paradigm that maybe we shouldn't when it comes to making diagnoses that aren't as objectivized? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the DSM-4, which is the diagnosis codes for mental illness, there are a lot of really specific things, mm-hmm. and then there's always not otherwise specified,
yeah.
which is that, like, doesn't really fit in this category, but definitely isn't normal type of thing.
Right.
And so I think there's a recognition that not, you know, as you were mentioning at the beginning, that not everything always falls perfectly into that. I think there is starting to be some recognition as mental illness is a chronic disease and addiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're finding that adverse childhood events are huge. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of that. It's an 18-question thing that basically says, you know, did any of these happen to you before you were the age of 18?
Right.
And it's, were your parents divorced? Was there any substance abuse in the home? Did you ever feel feel unsafe or worried that you were going to be hit. And we know that people who score a 4 or above on this 18-question thing are 4 times more likely to become addicted to anything. Pain medication that we prescribe, stuff on the street, marijuana. So although people are born with different brains, just like people are born with different colored hair, there are things that happen in our lives, especially early on, mm-hmm. that can definitely put people at higher risk
right.
for developing.
And I love the language there. I have nothing to add other than to say I like that higher risk, lower risk kind of thing. It's not nothing is guaranteed, and that's why I think a lot of people are uncomfortable in talking about this. Is that it's like you pointed out, it's not super objective, but that doesn't mean it's any less real.
No question. Yeah, no question. It's just that. My sense is that, again, sometimes we as an American culture, I want the answer. What's the
right.
deal?
Right.
What's the diagnosis? How do I treat it?
Right.
And your example, and I've had a family member that's probably had 7 or 8 different diagnoses over 4 years. So that ability
yeah.
to really hone down on, okay, this is my problem and this is the issue, because that helps the patient.
It well, does, right. Absolutely.
Knowing what their issue is. And so it's a frustrating realm, but that's just my own
yeah. Okay, we've got time for one more question, sir, in the blue in the back. You get the last comment, so no pressure.
Marijuana.
Okay.
And the question is on that.
There we go.
In the state that I live in, and maybe here too, of course, it's become legal.
Mm-hmm.
And but we have those who are very troubled with mental illness in our congregation that are not, you know, certainly have been, but now are. Participating in marijuana, you know, because they can get it either as a prescription or a license, grow a certain amount of plants or whatever. But it seems so troubling to me because, and perhaps I don't know the chemistry of all that, but in situations that I'm aware of, it just seems to complicate the matter more, and so very difficult from a pastoral standpoint. You know, of how to address that. I realize all drugs have their experimentation, and then they become, you know, common, and maybe marijuana is going to be that way too. But in our pastoral church setting, that's certainly becoming more and more.
Yeah, it's a tough issue that we're going to have to deal with. And I don't have any answers to that.
Let us know when you're going to preach.
Yeah, next year, Paragon 2018, Marijuana and the Master. Here we go. I don't have a lot of millennials in that class. I think that's good to point out. I think the danger of marijuana is that we're trying to figure all of that out. But at the same time, I know friends who have, one guy has PTSD, he got medical marijuana, and he's just a much better person to be around now. So I don't have an answer yet, but I am cautious.
Well, we were just wondering if we were going to go on the community garden.
For marijuana? That's a whole other conversation. Hey, guys, thanks so much for being here. Have a great day.
Good job, Kimo.
How do I turn this off?